This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in to Sports Daily here on this Tuesday morning here on KFH. Tommy Gester, Jacob Albrock, Max Power producing the program. The KFH hotline is open for you at 869-1240 this morning. Max Power manning that hotline today. A lot to get to here on the program this morning. The Royals stay hot. They continue to roll with the shutout against Chicago. Cole Reagans look dominant on the mound. We'll get into that a little bit later on in the program today. Our Chiefs insider, Felix Johnson, will join us to talk more about the Chiefs draft picks. We'll get into that and anything else NFL and Chiefs related with him as well. The NBA playoffs continue. Some exciting action last night in the NBA as well. I think we have Jacob. Jacob, good morning, man.
Yeah, I think the folks on the video stream can hear me. Can you hear me, Tommy?
I've got you.
Okay. All right. Here we go. We're rocking and rolling on this Tuesday. Yeah, it's a great night in the NBA playoffs. Maybe I missed stuff in the first round. I picked a good time to get in. Every time I watch a game, they have incredible finishes. Both the road teams winning last night. And, you know, for Thunder fans around here, you got some work to do. Aaron Gordon breaking the heart of Thunder fans last night. We had the Knicks get a win on the road against the defending champs. Max and I's Toronto Maple Leafs got a win in game one of their series. And then we had the Royals with their shutout, Tommy. It was a good night of sports. It was not like, that's it. Like you turn it on. Like it was hard to keep up with everything. I was trying to bounce back and forth between the Royals finish and the Knicks Celtics finish, which they went into overtime. And it was great. It was a great night of sports, I think. And it's a good time. Join me if you haven't been watching the NBA playoffs, because I hadn't been until over the weekend, and they have not let me down yet. These have been really, really good games.
They have been, and this is the time of year when, you know, obviously the NBA is like these playoff matchups. You've got, you know, these teams that are so well matched up against each other. Like, really, the cream does rise to the top. And so, look, I mean, you know, the way that – like, I look at a team like the Knicks, for example, and what they were able to do in overtime against the Celtics last night. You know, it's a Knicks team that Jalen Brunson has been kind of the clutch guy throughout the playoffs so far. He continues that into this series. And, you know, I don't know if anybody is, like, picking the Knicks to go all the way or anything, but I would suggest that they're probably maybe the top feel-good story, at least so far, in the NBA playoffs, if not, you know, Maybe they just are. Maybe they are the top feel-good story of all the teams remaining left in the NBA playoffs. Like, that's fun to watch. Just a lot of really great storylines as we continue.
Yeah, it was man, Brunson missing a shot late. That was hard. That was like you just couldn't believe he missed it, and then they won anyway. It'd be good to see the Knicks make it through. Nobody and Celtics don't need to win again. Well, nobody needs that. We also had the Shockers yesterday, Tommy, get an addition to the team. We'll get into this in the next segment. That it's not even to the point where it like rounds out the class or anything, but man, does it make the class really start to make sense and look pretty good. So that also out there, and we'll get into that one as well. Just want to give it just a little bit more time to kind of look at this class now as it's come together for Wichita State basketball. We know that Wichita State softball begins Wednesday afternoon. So that will be there, and they'll play like at 3 o'clock. So all kinds of little things happening around the area. The Royals last night, Tommy, we can hit on that real quick before we get into it a little more in depth. 3-0 winners. So, you know, kind of the same thing. Cole Reagans, I think first and foremost last night, Cole Reagans looked great. They were, you know, they were careful with him a little bit, you know, letting him go 5 innings and then kind of pulling the plug on that a little bit. But, you know, he's coming off an injury. It makes a lot of sense. He did get up to 94 pitches in 5 innings. That'll happen when you strike out 11 guys in 5 innings. But Reagans looked fine. He looked outstanding. That was probably his best start of the year.
Yeah, he looked really good, striking out 11 in 5 innings. And, you know, I know that when they announced that he was going to pitch today, I was a believer that maybe they should give him a little bit more time. I know they weren't going to put him on the IL, but with how good Noah Cameron looked in his first start in his major league debut, I was kind of the mindset initially that, look, they're playing the White Sox. White Sox are not a very good team. Let's, you know, be very careful with Reagans and maybe have him skip one more start and then have him come back the next time through the rotation. But, you know, once they announced him, I thought, okay, like clearly he's ready to go. And I'm sure that the Royals will be careful with him. And they were. He went 5 innings. You know, I know he had a pitch count up into the 90s, but it wasn't like he went deep into the game, but he was effective in those 5 innings. He was effective in those 5 innings for sure, you know, shutting down the White Sox. And that's really been, it's kind of rinse and repeat for the Royals. Like it's, you know, score a handful of runs, shut out your opponent. And then on, you know, kind of every few games or so, you can have the bats do what they need to do as well, like what we saw in the finale against Baltimore. So all in all, it was a return back to kind of standard Royals baseball with great pitching, just enough hitting, and they get the job done.
Yeah, Reagans, I think if he was going to miss, if they ever had the intention of him missing another one, they would have put him on the IL. So at minimum, he responded to this injury the way they thought and had hoped. And I think that's good news. He is the ace. Like he is your dominant pitcher. He did not look good the last time we saw him before the injury. So this was particularly good to see because, I mean, Tommy, there, like it's going to be pitching. Like I guess you know we're getting into this thing here. 36 games, it's going to be pitching. Like if it's going to be pitching, they're going to need Cole Reagans. So it was a really good sign to see him get back in. They bullpen in a game where the bullpen needed to give you 4 innings. They now stretch it out. Cruz continues to be a revelation. Lynch, Schreiber continue to be really good. You know that they've got Ursig back there. At some point, you think they're going to get Harvey. And Estevez is fine. He's looking sharp as the closer. Like, I mean, they have so much there. They're so deep in the rotation. They're so deep in the bullpen. I can't imagine outside maybe the Mets this year so far. We think the Dodgers will be there over time. Like, they're at least to me the best pitching in the American League, which is just an insane thing to say if you think back to a couple of years ago, how that's been rebuilt. I mean, you went from almost unusable pitching all over the place to now last year, and then this year they've taken it a step further. Offense aside, which it wasn't there enough again last night, that was the best pitcher they'll face, by the way, against the White Sox. Yeah. Shane Smith's
it was
been
fine.
Really good.
Like, look, I'm not. I think you have to have that trade off, and I'm okay with it right now. As long as the pitching is effective, which it absolutely has been, I'm not going to sit here and say, well, the offense wasn't enough. Well, no, it absolutely was enough.
Well, it was enough. Yeah,
they shut out the White Sox like that. Like
not letting anybody score.
I mean, they could win this. They could have won that game 1-0, and it would have been enough. You know, so yeah. Would you like to see it be fully complete and have a clicking offense and a clicking pitching staff all the time? Absolutely. You know, but I, I'm not going to, you know, sit here hand-wringing and be like, man, they need to score more runs. Well, do they? Because Cole Reagan shut out the White Sox and everything was good.
It is what it is, right? They're fine now because they're pitching so well. It's okay. I think long-term, we just keep watching it because they're going to make a move. They're not going to let this offense be their offensive image postseason. We'll talk more about the Royals in a little bit, but let's talk Shockers when we come back. Big addition through the portal last night, I think. We'll talk about it next.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily, and we are glad to be with you on this Tuesday. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every day here in the Odyssey Studios. Tommy, the Shockers get a player that is really interesting. I don't want to overstate anything with a true freshman from Fresno State, but what I take away from Brian Amunike, and I hope I'm saying that right, I have not heard it yet, but the way I look at it is like a need-based thing and trying to figure out the types of players Wichita State needs, wants, whatever. You've got a kid who was a freshman in the Mountain West who late in the year and in conference play really picked it up, almost averaged double digits in conference play, scored double digits in like 9 of his last 14. And it was, you know, it was like upper double digits in a lot of those. He shot a high percentage, from three. Their team was really bad, really, really bad last year. They won a couple of, you know, mail-in games early in the year, and then they won 3 games the rest of the way. That's it. They weren't very good, but he became a good scorer late in the year as his minutes increased. So, look, you look at it, and for me, like, this is exactly the type of player Wichita State needs still on the roster. And you know, we have seen other guys come in that you think could score, but maybe they've been guys who didn't play a ton at bigger schools or they were 6-man. No, he was kind of the focal point for Fresno State, it looks like, down the stretch. And I think you got to be a confident player offensively to do that, even as a freshman. And it looks like he did. And with as much defense and experience and that kind of thing that they've brought in elsewhere on the roster, this seems to fill a really big need for Wichita State next year, and I love it. I think it looks great, at least on paper.
Well, for me, it's really about, you know, the role that he plays and the lack of depth that the Shockers have had. in the backcourt. I mean, really, a lot of their new additions recently that we've been talking about have been front court guys, the size, you know, of, you know, 6'9" to 7'2", in the case of the kid that is coming from Purdue. So it's really been about size. It's been about defense, you know, about length, all of that for Paul Mills and what he has prioritized in the portal. And I remember I posed the question, I believe it was last week, when we were talking about the front court of the Shockers, and I posed the question, who's going to be in the backcourt? Like, who's going to be the primary ball handler? Is it going to be Kenyon Giles? Is it going to be Keandre Kendall? What is that going to look like? Both of those guys, while they, you know, should be at least capable of playing in the backcourt for Wichita State, at least I hope they are. We don't know much about either one of them, but I would think that they will be. That neither one of those guys are very big. Like, you know, we're talking 5'9", 5'10", 6', somewhere around there. What this guy brings to the table, the Fresno State transfer, and how'd you say his name, Amunike?
I'm going to say Amunike until Amunike. I get a chance to what, hear otherwise. What, so
what he brings is obviously being able to play in the backcourt and shoot the ball, score well, but he's also bringing some size and length into the backcourt as well. He's 6'5", and he's going to play in the backcourt. And so I think that that certainly helps out a lot too. You know, I don't know how he grades out defensively, but it certainly seems like the priority for him is to be one of the guys that can come in and put points on the board for Paul Mills. And that's an area where they have been lacking, at least in who they've brought in during the course of this offseason. And so I think it's an intriguing pickup for Paul Mills, especially for a team that has really, really struggled in shooting the basketball in years past. Having somebody come in that kind of seems to be his specialty, I don't know how it will translate at Wichita State and the style of play that Paul Mills wants to have. I'm not sure how it will translate in the American Conference necessarily, but it certainly does, on paper, fill a role that the Shockers desperately need.
Yeah, have needed for a decade or more, outside of one team, right? So, again, this is hard to do because we're watching a highlight clip here and there and, like, looking at game logs when we're dealing with transfer portal players, especially freshmen from a two-win Fresno State team. I get it. But that's all we can do, right? That's the only thing we really can. I love that this is a younger player. I love that. I cannot imagine that a young player who shot as well as he did from three would not be coveted in the portal. And so knowing that and the fact that Wichita State is able to go get him, I think is a good sign for the program. Look, I went into this whole process skeptical, right? Like at best. And I do like what they've done. And I've got to be honest with that. Like, I like what they're putting together on paper. We never know how this is going to work out, right? You don't know, especially with the portal, how pieces fit together. It's like, you know, in the old days, a team that graduates 6 or 7 guys every year. Like, you never know until they start playing, but we didn't know that last year either, or the year before. So you look at it, and when I look at what he did, it wasn't all about the three. It was a lot about the three, but he did score in other ways, it would appear. He had high shot volume games. He had games. I'm looking because I just keep looking at this stretch, really, like that was late January where he went down and he scored like 10 of 14 or however you want to look at it, where he really started to score. It's really when his minutes jumped, and you don't know why his minutes weren't there. You assume it's just because he was a freshman. But if you go through and you look at those games, you've got one outlier game where he didn't really play. In all the other games, he shot 50% or better, Tommy, 50% or better from three in all but like three of those games. And he was around 35% or higher in those other three. So, like, even in the games where he wasn't lights out, he would be 1 for 3, 2 for 6, whatever it is. Like, this consistently hit threes down the stretch. I don't know if he's going to come into Wichita State and they're going to say, all right, we want you to take 4 or 5 threes a game. Maybe they do. But it does look like he can score in other ways. And no matter what it is, when we looked at what was coming together on paper, it was lacking offense, right? It looked great defensively. They got their two bigs who look like they're just going to be bigs that can give you the defensive presence of a big. Maybe one of their offensive skill sets develop, but that's going to be a big loss with Quincy Ballard down. So it was all about defense, 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 which I love, by the way. I'm on the record of saying that. They did need some, you know, some splash offense, and it looks like they got one here. Are they finished? I have no idea. They still have a roster spot. I'm going to guess without knowing, because I haven't seen any of this, that this was a pretty big swing in the portal. Just on paper, from what we're hearing guys get, a freshman that can score and can shoot threes could not have been, like, I would imagine his list of suitors was long.
Yeah, and maybe you're probably right about that, but I do think it is important to temper expectations a little bit here, because it's not even necessarily about, you know, the player himself, because yeah, on a team that was not very good last year in Fresno State, he was effective offensively and shot the ball really well, especially down the stretch. It's more about, we've seen players that have been touted as good shooters play for Wichita State, and I'm going back, you know, multiple years.
No,
where
you're right.
Where it doesn't translate. And you know, I've heard a lot of people over the years be like, it's something about Coke Arena, you know, where like just shooting is just difficult in there. And I don't know. I'm not going to get into that.
It doesn't translate on the road, though.
Yeah, so I exactly. So I don't know if it's, because we've seen this happen with Paul Mills teams. We've seen it happen with Isaac Brown teams. We saw it happen with Greg Marshall teams. You know, outside of that one year, where it's not like you're talking about teams that are lighting it up from three of the last four seasons. So even going back into the Isaac Brown era, and this is from Taylor Eldridge, Wichita State ranked as one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the entire country. And so having a freshman from Fresno State who finished 6-26 last year, and he's a good shooter, don't get me wrong, well, that's nice to have him on the roster. I want to temper expectations and not go in being like, man, he's going to be the guy that is going to, you know, put up 20 plus points a game shooting it from long distance for Wichita State. He probably has the talent to be able to do so. I'll see it. I'll believe it when I see it, just because of the way historically guys shoot, you know, with Wichita State.
It doesn't mean they're going to be a great 3-point shooting team if he can shoot the three well. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't mean all of a sudden that's going to be the strength of this team. It means they have one guy, it would appear, that can shoot the three. And they've had, and a couple other guys, and this has been pointed out, don't shoot a high volume, but have been moderately effective. They're not going to be one of the best 3-point shooting teams in the country. Like, we can set that aside.
But they don't need to be. They don't need to be.
They don't, right. But they do need guys that can hit open threes from time. I shouldn't say this definitively, because we never know. But I don't think, like, they're going to go into next season and be like, all right, guys, I want us taking a ton of threes. That's going to be our offense. I don't think that's going to happen. That doesn't mean you don't need to make some threes.
Sure, absolutely. You need to have that in your arsenal, at least. But they're not going to live and die by the three-point shot. At least I don't think so. I don't think that's been their MO forever. So I feel like if there had been if there was an expectation on Amunike coming in and being this lights out sharpshooter that is going to be the guy that leads them offensively, it'd be a different conversation. While he may be a really good shooter and has an opportunity to grow and take steps forward, and I think he's a nice addition for the Shockers, I think it's important to call him what he is. And what he probably will be in this system, and that is somebody that they can rely on, hopefully, to be able to hit some open threes when needed, when called upon, but probably not the focal point of the offense.
See, that's what I don't know. I would not be surprised if a player that's young, that came on late in a season, now with on what we expect to at least be a, you know, a competitive, good team and a good conference, like it with the right opportunity, and this is what gets so tricky about the portal, right? With the right opportunity, what's there for you? We saw, I mean, you've got to go back in history and look at this. Sometimes guys take advantage of it. Sometimes guys don't, right? Like it sort of depends. Colby Rogers thrived in that role, right? You go back, Justin Hill did not last year thrive in that role. He did for a minute, and then he did not. Ricky Council, people probably thought, should have had more of the opportunity to do that, because it was looking like he could be the guy to do that. And I would fall into that camp. Like, he should have been given more opportunities because of his ability and what he was showing you. I absolutely think a guy coming into his sophomore season who became, you know, the offensive focal point for his team in the Mountain West, by the way, which is a better league than the AAC. Fresno State's not a better team, but that's a better league that he was doing this up against than what the AAC was a year ago. And so, yeah, I do think there's a chance he comes in and becomes the – I mean, he's not a freshman anymore.
I mean, think about it this way. So, you know, Wichita State shot just over 30% from beyond the arc last year, 30.2%. Did not grade out well at all in that category.
In a low volume.
In a low volume. So they didn't take a lot of threes. They didn't make a lot of threes, but they were just over 30%. I think if you were to say, okay, Amunike coming in and what he can do shooting the three, you know, if he can get them single-handedly up to maybe around 35% as a team collectively shooting the three, if he can improve them 5 percentage points year over year, I think you would take that. I think you would call that a success.
Absolutely.
I don't think you're going to come in and be like, okay, this guy single-handedly by himself is going to get Wichita State up over 40% shooting. Like that, that's unrealistic, right? Like,
I think don't care about that.
I think it's more about like, hey, can he collectively get us out of the gutter, you know, get us out of the cellar shooting threes, because he hopefully will have some opportunities to take some open threes and maybe make them and that sort of thing, to get them incrementally better at that position. I think, in my opinion, and maybe I'll be proven wrong. Hopefully I am. Hopefully he's this lights out dynamite offensive threat for Wichita State. But in my mind, I see his addition and his role to incrementally get the Shockers better offensively. If that means if he can get you up, you know, another 5 percentage points, that's fantastic. 2 percentage points, I think we'll take it. Like anything above where they have been in shooting the three nationally, I think you take that as a win.
See, I don't even care about what it does for the team. All I care about is that this team has a guy that can score 12 or 13 points a game. That's it for me. So, you know, if he can, and that's where I'm focused. I don't know what he's going to do philosophically to the 3-point shooting woes of the entire team. I have no idea.
It's cause and effect. If he does that, the other, like, what one thing happens,
I think he might. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, stylistically, I don't know that they're going to become a good 3-point shooting team. I'm more concerned that this team, like what we would perceive maybe as a starting five or whatever, a rotation, has a guy that can go get 12 or 13 points.
I mean, I think the other thing to keep in mind too, and this again, this makes it so difficult in this era with the transfer portal, because yeah, they went out and got this kid. He may not even play. I mean, like I think he's probably talented enough to play for sure with what he did last year on a bad Fresno State team. But there have been plenty of times where, not just with Wichita State, with teams in general, you're like, hey, they went and got this guy, and then the guy never plays. So who knows? I mean, we have no idea.
That is absolutely the most difficult part. At least, and that's why we started this conversation, like, on paper, we're guessing, like, I don't know about any of these players. You know, like, what's to say a SoCon defensive player of the year translates to the AAC either? Like we're guessing, and we have no reservations.
Is the 7'2" guy?
We're absolutely guessing. Everybody,
the 7'2" guy who played 3 minutes a game for Purdue, is he going to play? I mean, I don't know. I mean, how does that translate to American play? He's 7'2". Like, does that translate well? I mean, we don't know. On paper, you know, sure. Like, you've got the size, you've got the prowess, I guess, and the Big Ten experience, at least in a limited capacity. Does that translate? Well, I mean, we're just taking shots in the dark here. It's kind of like throwing darts, and until we actually see it round into form, we don't know for sure.
We don't, and we won't. And that's the most difficult part of this. Some people enjoy the portal, and I understand why. I get it. I get the reason for it. It's like free agency every year. For me, though, it's the total unknown is difficult. And this is the first year we've had, like, essentially every team in the country with a total unknown. In years past, you've had some returners and everything else. This year, it's been everybody just jumps in and everybody totally rebuilds their roster. So we're all guessing. I mean, that's what it is. Is that ideal? Of course it's not. And is that going to be forever? I don't think so. But until we do, this is what we have. And so as we look at things on paper, and look, I thought K-State, the collection of players they put together a year ago looked like it would make great sense and be a great team. And for a small stretch of the season, they were absolutely that. And for more of the season than not, they were not very good. So who knows? Who knows, right? Until we see him play. And it's a roller coaster ride of a season anyway. But when we evaluate the whole thing and know that Wichita State lost all its players, most notably Quincy Ballard and Corey Washington, right? Those guys weren't coming back. When we learned that, it's like, well, now what do they do? We've had all the talk of needing $1 million and all these things. I think they've done a good job. I do. I think that they have put together on paper a collection of players that makes sense, right? All right, Tommy, we come back. It's just crazy. What were we laughing at the other day? It was the team in the NBA playoffs. I don't remember which one it was. Missed 40 threes. Well, the Celtics missed 45 of them last night. That is wild to me to think about that many threes. It's just crazy. We can get into the NBA playoffs a little bit in the next hour.
I mean, it's must-see TV, right? I'm like, where else are you going to get a team missing 40-some threes in a game?
I don't like the chuck it style of the – I get it. I understand it. I know why it's happening. Analytics, all that. There are better shooters now. I get all of that, but I don't like it. Like, it's not as good to my eyes. But that's okay. Like, every style works, and it didn't work last night for the Celtics. So the Knicks are up 1-0. And we get the other two. All the road teams so far, we haven't seen Minnesota and Golden State, but right now all the road teams have won their game ones, which has been another interesting part of that. Let's dig in a little further on the Royals, Tommy. We touched on it just briefly there. Reagans, we touched the best sign of the night. It's Cole Reagans. Without question, undoubtedly, I think the second best sign is that they just continue to find effective bullpen arms. Those things could last the entire season and make the lack of offense we've seen through the first 35, 36 games less important, still important, but less important, especially in the short term when they're playing in a division that appears to be really, really good. The other thing for me that I think last night I take away from is Jonathan India. I think it was, I don't remember which of the announcers or whether it was listening to it on the radio on the way home or whether I was watching it when I got home. One way or the other, it was something like he has been on base in the last, is it four games or something, 9 out of 17 times? Like just a crazy rate. He is really coming on. And it was Hudler, I know, who talked during the game after I think it was his second hit, that it's taking him some time, but it appears he has learned now. He's got to stop trying to get him out of the yard at Kauffman. Like stop trying to hit the ball in the air. Like that kind of power it's a different kind of power to be able to get it out consistently at Kauffman. So refocus your approach at the plate, especially in that ballpark. And whatever it is, it's working. And India is starting to get on at a pretty crazy rate, quite frankly. And if that continues, it'll take some of the pressure off of the middle of the order. But, you know, I would tell you most nights when Salvi and Vinny go a collective 0-for-7, the Royals are going to struggle to score runs. I mean, that's pretty simple. I mean, those two guys have got to be the guys.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think India has, you know, shown that he understands what that role is. And we've seen his, you know, his OPS climb and his batting average climb. At one point, a couple of weeks ago, when the Royals were down in the dumps and they were not scoring any runs, they were losing games. That road trip was really difficult for them back last month. I mean, India's batting average dropped under 200, and you're kind of like, man, what's happening here? And he was still getting on base, I guess, halfway decently. He was walking occasionally and like that sort of thing, but it wasn't at the clip that we wanted to see. You know, since that time, he's got his batting average all the way up to 230, which is not lighting the world on fire, but it's significantly better than what it was. And he's got that OPS, you know, up to 639. I mean, literally, it's right behind Salvador Perez from an OPS perspective, and it's above Vinny Pasquantino's OPS right now. You know, so he is producing and doing the things that he needs to do. He's not stealing bases, but that's really never been I think, an expectation for him necessarily, even though he's at the very top of the lineup. His expectation is get on base, get moved over, and score runs. That's why he's there, and he's doing that at a much higher clip than he was.
I don't care if he steals bases or not, because if he does, he ends up at second and gives the other team the option of picking in a Bobby Witt Jr. So I don't like that anyway. I mean, it's fine if he wants to steal bases from time to time, but I don't think that needs to be a part of his
game. That's not been an expectation, I don't think, of his.
OPS you mentioned there. Look, that's all. I'm glad he's climbing above those guys. That's still below league average. What I don't know with him, though, like, is his ever going to get that high? Because if he really has changed his approach, like it was suggested in the broadcast, that's going to mean a lot of singles, right? And not a lot of power. OPS, to calculate it, needs some of that slug. Well, you're not going to get a lot of that slug if you're a singles hitter, right? It sort of reminds me, as I've watched him lately, you remember Michael Young? I know Rangers fans obviously love him. He's got, but dude always was up in the league and hits and everything else was a lot of singles. And so a lot of people didn't value him the same way, but in reality, if you watched him every day, it was insanely valuable, right? His ability to get on base. And so I don't know how much higher the OPS is going to be. He is a career league average OPS guy, which is around 750. So he's pretty well below where his average is getting, but he's been playing half his games every year in perhaps the most hitter friendly park in the big leagues. So we've got to take some context in with that. I think for this team, how he performs just getting on base in general is probably more important. I don't know that his slug or OPS, though, is going to get very high playing at Kauffman. But I do think his on-base percentage can easily get back to at least where it is over the course of his career, which is still just a little bit higher than it is in totality this year. So his game seems to be rounding into form. He has been a good drink, stirrer for this offense for the last couple of weeks. And I think we're seeing him find his groove for sure.
They absolutely had to have somebody at the top of that lineup who could get on base, yes, and they could set the table for Bobby Witt Jr., Pasquantino, and Perez. That's why they brought him in. They needed that. I mean, there were so many times last season that it was an automatic out basically at the top of the lineup, and Bobby Witt Jr. would come to the plate with one out and nobody on. And, I don't care how Jonathan Indy is doing it. I don't care if he's hitting a bunch of singles. I don't care if he's walking. I don't care how he's doing it necessarily, as long as he is setting that table for them. And to put it in perspective, like, again, I don't particularly care about the slugging numbers. And I know that goes into OPS. But if you just want to look at on-base percentage, among players that are regularly playing for the Royals, he's third in OBP right now, behind Michael Garcia and Bobby Witt Jr. That's what you need from him. That's literally the reason why he's there offensively, and the fact that you add on his versatility in the field and the fact that he can play multiple positions and the Royals are able to deploy him in multiple places depending on their need, depending on the situation, and depending on the game and their opponent. Again, that's exactly why he's there. I think he's for sure fulfilling why he's on that roster, and I'm good with it. I've been great with Jonathan Indy since day one, even when he was kind of grinding and struggling through that tough stretch, when everybody was kind of grinding and struggling through that tough stretch. I still believe that, he was still getting on base. He was walking a ton. And so I've been a big fan of Jonathan Indy, and I think he's absolutely rounding into form.
Yeah, I do too. And it's not like, so that's the, and then the reality when I look at it is they still have to get more from Benny and Salvi. And that's not going to change, right? That's always going to be the case. They're going to get Bobby Witt Jr. has been great. Michael Garcia has been great. But to me, like, as we're seeing this stretch out over time, the biggest difference between the offenses a year ago, it's that those guys last year were two of the best RBI players in baseball, both packed in the middle of the Royals lineup. They need some of that back, because if you look at the lineup right now, India, we're all good with, right? We all like India. Bobby Witt Jr. is Bobby Witt Jr. Michael Garcia right now is hitting in the five hole. He's been fantastic. Drew Waters is down there. right? Kyle Isbell provides his defense and the things he does. So, you know, Michael Massey had a big offer again yesterday, but there's not even a lot of like room for somebody to come in anyway. Cags would give this team something they desperately need, which is power, right? They need that. That's pretty obvious, and he could easily do it at a corner outfield spot. So we can set that to the side. But even if they do, and I do think they will, get aggressive when the time comes, it's hard to imagine where they're even going to put it, right? Because right now it's more about, like, you know what? You're not replacing Salvi and Vinny. Right, you're not doing anything, but that's where
That's off the table. I mean,
I think you need.
Well, is it though? Because I mean, I think it is with Vinny. I mean, I think that we need Vinny's batting average to improve. Salvador Perez
in .238 right now.
Yeah, but what has Salvi done in the last 2 weeks? The last 3 weeks, like he has heated up for sure. He's second on the team in doubles. He's third on the team in hits. He's third on the team in RBIs. That's right where you need him to be. He did not have a good start to the season. I think we all know that, and he got off to a slow start. He has rounded into form. I'm not concerned about Salvi whatsoever. And honestly, I'm not super concerned about Vinny either. I mean, you know, he's hitting more home runs than anybody else. He's, you know, he's getting bad. I mean, he's always hit the ball hard, you know, throughout the course of this season. Yeah, that you look at the totality of this entire season, and Vinny's batting under 200. Salvi's batting .238. All of that. And so, yeah, you need to see more consistency for sure from those two guys in the heart of your lineup. But at least during, and I guess my overall point in all of this is that the Royals are the hottest team in all of baseball. And so rather than nitpicking on, well, this guy's only batting .238 right now, they're the hottest team in baseball. Like they're figuring it out. Like it's working for them right now. And the guys in the heart of the lineup are producing at a higher clip than they were 2 or 3 weeks ago. So I'm all good with it. Like I'm off that train right now of they've got to do something. They've got to bring up Cags, or they've got to get aggressive with somebody and trade. Like they're the hottest team in Major League Baseball. Their pitching is elite. The lineup, yeah, there are deficiencies for sure, but they're compensating and everything is working and clicking right now. So let's leave well enough alone.
Well, it's not, I'm not complaining about this. I'm not saying they're not playing well. It's none of that. It's like, I expect this team to be able to compete for a World Series. So that's all I'm looking at. Like, and Salvador Perez, by the way, has been the catalyst for the win streak.
Totally.
If you go back and you look at what his numbers were when the win streak, since they started this stretch, which was the final game of the Detroit series, his batting average, Tommy, has raised 53 points.
Absolutely, it has.
His on-base percentage has raised 50. He isn't hitting any home runs. I don't think he has a home run in that stretch.
Yeah, but he's a doubles machine. I mean, he has
an obscene amount of doubles. Yeah. It's like 5, 6, 7, 8 doubles over those, whatever it is, 12 games. So he's been the catalyst for the turnaround. They just need to continue. I think they will. I love Salvador Perez so much. He's such a fun player to watch. And yes, everything's going great. It's just, you know, is this team a team like, you know, I'm not backing off my prediction that they're going to the World Series out of the American League. So everything's with a microscope with that expectation. In the micro, though, like, yeah, it's going great. Still is for the stinking Tigers, too, and the Guardians who keep winning. This division's going to be wild down the stretch. Three really good teams, and the Twins are heating up, too. We might get into the rest of the division in the next hour. We'll come back, though. Another hour of Sports Daily. We got Felix Johnson this hour to talk some Chiefs. It's all Brockton Caster. Don't go away.